Hi there, can I take your order?
Yes, I'll have the depression, insomnia, migraines, muscle cramps, and chronic fatigue, thanks.
So that's 4 packs of gum for you, sir. Anything else with that?
And the chemical soup, thanks.
So that's a diet soda and 4 packets of gum. That comes to $4.60, thank you, sir.
They tell me that it's not that bad. It'll fuck you up good, but it's not that bad.
Leave it in the fridge or right there on the shelf. Cause it's time to grow up and take care of yourself. You don't put water in the petrol tank, so why are you putting petrol in your water tank? You think grown-ups will be sure to think, so think about what you order, drink, cause you aren't a baby now.
Danger, danger, equal, NutraSweet, aspartame.
On the record, put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record when the drum beats go like this.
The only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
Put the needle to the record, cause the needle is defective. And the needle breaks the record when the needle is the method. For prevention of the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method feeds the fever. See the leader, diseases are invented in the lab. One believes it, or reading recent mentions of the jab. Centered in a grand scab of corruption and lies. And taking views of doom from newsroom into the public eye. But now the floor has risen on a cause of autism. Doctors show research, and scores applaud with them. It's mercury and vaccines, often there's more given. Peace ignored and forbidden, cause profit is war driven. A score billion on vaccines alone, and the government don't care, they're always taxing the clones. And the CDC is right behind this rolling cart, part involved from the start in this evolving art. A big pharma, big deception, Obama, big karma. Enter Wade's Roach Bayer and Baxter Healthcare. All assorted history with stacks of health scares. You got HIV and bird flu mixed up in the shops. I've been connecting the dots between the money that swaps. Conspiracy? Yeah, I sense a couple of plots.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if the doctor says he'll make him take it himself, just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if Obama says he'll make him take it himself, just say no.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no affliction. Corporate pharmaceutical teaming with politicians. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we want spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They adding to the list pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, Alexa Finland, GlaxoSmithKline, Coffin, Mac, and Fine. Scaling senior disease, macaque, cough, and better swine. Your population linked with holding vaccines. Rather let a product lapse and save some human beings. Now death is a cannon to be in, so they want to hear us when we're running on the machine. Another flu kill, that ain't our biggest threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. They just ain't no taste in their news feed.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
No, why don't you go first?
There's one little word that can save your health.
Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
If the doctor says, yes, make him take it himself.
Say no, no, no. Say no to the vaccine. There's one little word that can save your health.
Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
And if Obama says, yes, make him take it himself. Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
Don't get any injection. You never know what's in them. They're all poison. And there's no record that they ever prevent anything.
To you.
Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children from birth under the guise of child protection and, you know, proper childbirth. And we're going to be dealing with that subject today. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the Hippocratic oath taken to first do no harm. I left my career as a surgeon in the early 1990s after witnessing research fraud, experimentation on poor people, and euthanasia. After the brain damage of my only child born in 1996 from vaccines he received due to my belief in what I had been taught in medical school, I started researching what vaccines really do, which is create all autoimmune diseases, non-traumatic seizures, cancer, and genetic damage in people and in pets. I also started studying natural therapies to reverse the diseases caused by Big Pharma, as well as the toxins we are exposed to. In 1997, I developed the Hippocrates Protocol to reverse all diseases, and in 1999, I created the diagrams on my websites, including the big picture of all diseases, which is the first diagram found on both of my websites, reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com and drcarly.com. I strongly suggest that you print out those diagrams and listen to the YouTube videos posted there where I explain these diagrams, which are based on pure common sense and have never been refuted, despite a $10,000 reward I posted on drcarly.com in 2006 for any white coat to refute them on the air. To this day, I have received no takers to this challenge. Thanks to the persecution I encountered due to my work, including the abduction and ongoing state-sanctioned torture of my son, I was forced to face the truth that all the problems we face are being caused intentionally, and the solutions that have been developed by people of conscience who step out of the boxes created when one becomes a licensed professional in any field are being suppressed. Facing the reality that the psychopaths which control our world have created a hell on earth intentionally is the critical step in bringing forth an anti-hell. Overstanding the simplicity of the master template of how this hell has been created makes the antidote equally simple. We don't need all the details. All that is necessary is for people of conscience to say no to their predators, to stop loving them, forgiving them, making excuses for them, and to stop funding our own destruction. It is my intention to give you the truth of what I and my guests have learned to arm you with the confidence to ask the hard questions, which will not only cause the predators to run away, but will also cause you to face the monsters destroying your lives. There is an army of people of conscience standing up. Our very survival is being threatened. It is time to stand up, speak up, and when necessary, shout. Silence is consent, and if you do not stand up and speak out, you are aiding and abetting your own destruction, thus acting as an accomplice to those murdering you and those you love. Speaking the truth and asking hard questions in great numbers is the road to anti-hell. Bypassing religious beliefs that only some man in the sky can save us is very important, as religion prevents logic, reasoning, formation of a plan to save ourselves, and then taking action. For only acting on the truth will set you free. Believing the lies or doing nothing will enslave you. Confronting evil with documented truth is all we need to do. Compromise with evil is impossible. And when evil is on the run, that's when we press harder. Whatever false beliefs you have about any subject, that is what is being used to control you. Overstanding the puppet masters allows us to see the master template of the predators' crimes against humanity, as well as how they use psyops operatives to divide and distract people of conscience. We can then cease being prey and destroy the predator bloodline psychopaths that have created a hell on earth. If you think my work is important, please tell others about this show. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them from me. To learn how I do consults, click on the services tab on my reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com website. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. I also have a toll-free number, 888-321-6751, on which you can contact me from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. If you get a strange message that the number has been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for my international clients and radio shows. I do not practice medicine or give medical advice. Rather, I teach you what I would do if I were you to reverse disease with natural therapies in people and in pets. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, and we ask you to hold off until the second hour for your questions, you can call in at 785-336-5190 or Skype the producer of the show at Patty, P-A-T-T-I-E, space, walk-in turtle, all one name. Patty space walk-in turtle. Very important. Callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever is speaking. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase a silver lungs colloidal silver generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com to learn how to obtain the silver generator I use personally for myself and all my pets. On today's show, the answer to the question, what's ailing the world, is circumcision-induced demasculation of father/protectors. And I have two guests on the show that I had on my other radio show a little over a year ago. The first one is Rich Winkle. He has written a very important document entitled Male Circumcision in the USA, a Human Rights Primer, and the producer has posted the link to that document on the site. And I also have on the show today a woman by the name of Janelle Martin, who is working on a documentary that is hopefully going to be ready by Father's Day, very appropriate, called The Other Side of the Glass, the first birth film for fathers. And these two subjects go hand in hand together, and it's very important that we wake up and realize that our children are being abused from the very moment they're born. And of course, circumcision is one of those things that are being done to the children. But anyways, we'll start talking to Rich Winkle about that. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Hi, thanks, Dr. Carly, for all you're doing.
Okay, and you also have your own show, correct?
Off and on, yes, on KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, and we have a website called thoughtcrimeradio.net, and the old podcasts are listed there on the right. I did with Janelle for a long time, and it's well worth checking out if you're interested in the welfare of children and what they face in medicine, because American medicine, and probably to some extent British and Canadian medicine, and others like that, are derived from the same type of medical culture, they are probably the biggest danger that children face in society today.
Well, I totally agree, and as a matter of fact, in my opinion, medicine has become a cult. It's like another religion. You know, the white coats are the priests, the vaccines are the baptismal rites, and, of course, the circumcision is involved oftentimes if they're boys. And this is how they start the trauma and the disease process that, you know, leads you to end up becoming a major, you know, a supplier of funds to Big Pharma. And that's apparently what has been designed to be, although, of course, it is my goal to cause the death of medicine. And when I first, go ahead.
I was just going to say that some of the people that are damaged by this ongoing intergenerational abuse that's been happening for, you know, centuries, I suppose, at least decades, some of the survivors of this, some of the damaged people go on to join the medical profession, the political prescriptions and so on, and help to perpetuate the process. So what we're talking about is an entity. It's not an event. It's an ongoing, sequential, intergenerational form of normalized abuse.
Well, I agree with you. And, of course, in regards to circumcision, the big lie that we were taught in medical school is that circumcision, you know, actually allows the male to more properly conduct hygiene for his, you know, penis, and that they lied to us and told us that studies have shown there's less risk of, you know, cancer in women, which they didn't mention the human papillomavirus at that point. They just told us that, you know, this is what studies have shown. You know, what, as far as I'm concerned, pretty much all of research is fraudulent anyways, because, you know, that's why they invented statistics to twist and spin the data. And then, of course, they can always remove the outliers from the study if they want to, if those individuals do not go along with their purported hypothesis, et cetera, et cetera. But when I first met you, go ahead.
I was just going to say, people really need to become at least minimally acquainted with statistics and how it can be abused. It's not that difficult a subject. You simply, one of the main techniques is just to arrange the data or filter the data in such a way as to reinforce your predetermined conclusions. But if you look at the history of circumcision, especially over the past century or so, it's very well laid out on the internet. You can do the research very readily, find out that all of the rationalizations for continuing this practice in turn, they all happen to correspond to whatever the demon of the day happens to be. In the current day, it's HIV and HPV. But you quickly discover that historically, all of these rationalizations have turned out to have no scientific basis. And we already have actually the evidence that the HIV and HPV rationalizations have no scientific basis either, although that still hasn't filtered down to the mainstream. But it will eventually.
Yes, and it will from shows such as this. As a matter of fact, there's a physician, Nancy Banks. She has a YouTube, Nancy Banks on Vaccination, the only other MD I've ever found who speaks about vaccinations in terms of their use for genocidal purposes. And she's actually written a book. I will have her on this show sometime in the near future, where she actually educated me and proved that AIDS doesn't exist in the first place. It's all a scam. But, of course, it's the drugs they give the people that have AIDS that actually kill them. So we've been lied to about everything, and that's why it's so important, as you said, Rich, for people to do their own research. And I just want to mention some of the most important points in your amazing document, Male Circumcision in the USA, a Human Rights Primer. One of the things that you mention in this document is that a typical Western medical circumcision results in the loss of approximately one half of the total surface area of the penis and between 50 and 80% or more of its erogenous sexual nerves. And you talk about the frenulum, which is a highly erogenous V-shaped tethering structure on the underside of the head of the penis. And I cringed when I read this, because when I was a surgical resident, one of the first surgeries that you do as a first year resident are circumcisions. And what we do is take this gigantic hemostat, which is a big clamp with like teeth on it, and clamp it to the frenulum. That's how the procedure begins. And, you know, one can only imagine the pain that this must cause. But you also...
You don't have to imagine it.
Go ahead.
You don't have to imagine. You don't have to imagine the pain. The research is out there. They know that the impact on the hormonal system and the metabolism of the baby is highly consistent with torture.
Yes. And that, as Janelle also talks about in her video, there's actually like information that's actually downloaded to the infant at the cellular level. All of these traumas that happen are basically downloaded to the child. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that she mentions is how it's a major impediment, for example, to breastfeeding, because all the things that are done to the baby from the moment the baby's born, including suctioning the child and, you know, vaccinating the child and all of these horrific things that they do, the child is massively traumatized. I mean, this is child abuse. And so, of course, the child is going to be in a state of shock, basically, psychically, and going to have trouble breastfeeding. And, of course, this is one of the things that they use to try to talk the parents into not breastfeeding. When I had my son, I was determined to breastfeed, and it's not as easy as it sounds. I mean, you actually have to have somebody show you how to do it. And my son did not want to breastfeed, and if it had not been for one particular nurse who hung in there with me and helped me learn how to do it, and helped my son learn how to do it, they would have basically been able to, you know, shuttle me over to the whole formula thing, which, of course, at that time I didn't even realize how bad formula is. I did know that, you know, the breast milk has all kinds of important immunoglobulins and things of that nature, which is why I was bound and determined to do it. But there's all kinds of things that they've instituted in order to, you know, basically get things to go the way they want them to go. And go ahead, Rich.
If I could just mention, there's a second paper out there. It's really sort of a collection of links for people that are interested in doing the research, dealing with the overall scope of the range of abuses that occur in obstetrical wards. And that's called Munchausen Obstetrics. It's one of the links actually in the circumcision paper, but you can go directly to it and see the more holistic, you know, perspective if you first look, or at least, you know, scan over the Munchausen Obstetrics paper. But, you know, the definition of Munchausen, of course, is where you create the problem that you purport to have the remedy for. And, you know, it's the same sort of thing that governments do when they want to control their population. They stage a terrorist attack and everybody, you know, goes to the authority figures for the remedy. That's been going on in medicine for a long time. I imagine medicine actually taught it to politicians some time ago. But yes, there's a whole range of things ranging from premature cord clamping to episiotomy to it's just an unbelievable series of abuses that children endure.
Well, I can't wait to check out that reference, because just last week I had on my show a journalist from the UK who's exposing the fact that they're using that diagnosis of Munchausen syndrome by proxy as an excuse to take children away from mothers who claim their children are vaccine damaged. So, you know, that's a perfect turnaround on these monsters. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's pretty ironic, considering that medicine really is the primary practitioner of Munchausen by proxy.
I love it. I love it. That is perfect. Okay, I just want to read a couple other things from your paper, and then I'll let you take it wherever you want to go. You mentioned here in 1888, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, a well-respected physician and founder of the Kellogg Cereal Company, spoke for mainstream Victorian medicine when he wrote, "A remedy for masturbation, which is almost always successful in small boys, is circumcision. The operation should be performed by a surgeon without administering an anesthetic, as the brief pain attending the operation will have a salutary effect upon the mind, especially if it be connected with the idea of punishment." How sick is that?
Well, it's just unbelievable. It's laughable. It's tragic. It's you know, it's the stuff of novels that you could be subjecting a newborn baby to this kind of torture, this kind of sadomasochistic torture. And inherently, I mean, the only way to avoid the conclusion that this is a form of sadomasochism is to assume that the baby is not really there. In the operating room, that he's not conscious, or you know, not really, he's still in a primordial state where he's not really a human being yet. You have to make that assumption in order to conclude that a baby would not be paying very acute attention to anyone that is fooling with his genitals. You know, this is inherently a sexual act. We're talking about a sexual act here. That's how it's perceived by the baby. It's inescapable. Babies are perfectly capable of experiencing sexual sensations. Fetuses have been found to be masturbating in the womb. Okay, they can detect this with ultrasound. So this is inherently sadomasochism being practiced on newborn babies.
Yes.
And you can imagine, you know, the imprint, the effect of imprinting this information, because babies imprint just like any other animal.
Right.
And you are forming the emotional and psychological foundations of a new human being when you are, you know, fooling with their genitals and subjecting them to, you know, crushing, you know, it's typical to crush the foreskin, before you cut it off. And when you crush, you know, the foreskin with these clamps, you are stimulating all of the pain receptors that go into the foreskin. You are simultaneously creating massive pain sensations into the rest of the body and into the brain and into the rest of the body. And you're associating that with sex.
Yes. And, of course, masturbation is a normal physiologic response. I mean, this is how children get to investigate themselves and find out, you know, what's pleasurable, whatever. I mean, I have 3 dogs and 2 cats, and they're constantly, you know, doing things to each other, which lets me know, and it's not that they're immoral or anything like that, you know, that's just how they roll. And, of course, one of the problems that we have, and this is why, unfortunately, I got my own son circumcised, because daddy had been circumcised, and daddy wanted his little boy to look like him. And so I agreed to allow my son to be circumcised. His circumcision was totally botched. He had such massive swelling that once the swelling had subsided, basically whatever skin he had left had stretched out to the point where he didn't even look like he'd been circumcised. I've had no contact with him for a decade, so I don't know if they've put him through the trauma of having that done again as well. I just want to mention a very important article that was recently published 4th of March of this year on Mail Online, dailymail.co.uk, and Rich told me that he's heard of other cases of this as well. The title of the paper is 2-week-old baby died of herpes contracted disease through circumcision. And in fact, one of the really sick practices in the Jewish religion is when the boy is 8 days old, they have this moil come to the house, and I would love to know the derivation of that word. It probably means monster in Hebrew or something. And in fact, without anesthesia, the moil does a circumcision on the baby while all of the family is, you know, standing by watching and snapping photographs and such. And one of the really sick things that they do is that the moil then performs fellatio on the baby with the excuse that this is how they're going to stop the bleeding. And in fact, the moil that sucked on this little baby's penis had herpes. The baby got herpes and died at 2 weeks of age. So, you know, this is beyond sick, but this is, you know, what they do. And so you can imagine how traumatized these Jewish babies are, because when I worked in the hospital, we did give the babies anesthesia. You know, how much that actually worked, who knows. But in these cases, they don't. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, well, of course, this is not the first time this particular event has happened. I remember, you know, during the research 5 or 6 years ago, something like that was in the news. So, I mean, anything in the moil's mouth is going to, you know, come into contact with the open flesh wound of the penis. I mean, but the whole thing, of course, is very, you know, perverse. And you have to say, you know, whether you're Jewish or not, the idea of someone torturing a little penis and then sucking on it is just, there's something really wrong with that whole thing. You know, you know, with or without the religious ritual, it, you know, if you strip it of the religious ritual, it's certainly something you would never allow anyone to do to a child.
Yes. I just want to point out, see, I am so disgusted with myself that I didn't check things out before I allowed my son to be circumcised, but it was his father. You know, he wanted his baby to look like him. And what a stupid reason to do a procedure like that.
That's just another rationalization, and I go into that in the paper, that one of the prime psychological motivations behind this is the father cannot face his own damage, and so he doesn't want to call the whole thing into question by allowing the child to remain intact. And so it's not uncommon for fathers to fall into this rationalizing mode of trying to justify their own damage.
Exactly. And you know, and that's why I titled the show Circumcision Induced Demasculation of the Father Protectors. Because in fact, and this ties into Janelle's documentary, The Other Side of the Glass, when you actually think about the fact that the fathers stand on the other side of the glass, watch their children be traumatized in all the ways that they are traumatized after birth, and do nothing. And I totally, you know, relate that to the fact that they've been circumcised themselves, and it's like, oh, okay, I got to follow the rules, you know, I got to do what I'm told. We don't want them to call security. In the trailer on Janelle's site, she actually has one of the fathers speaking about how he started pounding on the glass, and of course, the first thing they did was call security, and he was pounding on the glass because his child was screaming because of something they were doing to the child. And, you know, you're not allowed to protect your own child in the hospital. It's sick.
Yeah, I've heard the term emotional castration applied to circumcision. And when you think about it, the neurological networks associated with pleasure are very closely tied in with all of our altruistic and empathic motivations. When you sever that linkage and numb that access to pleasure, what you're doing is reducing the consciousness of the victim, and making you, it really is a form of enslavement, because you're taking away the motivations that would normally be used by people to form social communities and be able to act together to accomplish a shared objective, which is what the nature of power is in society. That, you know, power is the ability for groups of people to come together and act in coordination to achieve a shared objective. And you undermine people's empathy and ability to psychologically, you know, connect and have compassion for others. You know, what you're doing, aside from creating a psychopath or inducing psychopathy, is you're disempowering people. You are reducing them to an atomized serf.
Slave work units is what I call them, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the term emotional castration is very apt here.
Definitely. Definitely. I totally agree. Okay, is there anything else you want to mention before we bring Janelle on? And I want us to all have a conversation, because, as I said, this all feeds into each other, because, of course, this circumcision assault is one of the things that's happening on the other side of the glass. Although, of course, they take the baby into another room, they're not going to let the father see this procedure actually done, because then he may break the glass. But is there anything else you wanted to mention? And I do encourage everybody to read Rich's amazing paper. Give it to anybody that's about to have a child. And the link is on the website. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I would like to mention what we discussed on the air before we went on air. The link, the Google that I suggested on the last time we did a radio show, about the sadomasochistic nature of circumcision, and that's there's no better illustration of the sadomasochistic nature of this than to discover that one of the things that doctors frequently do in order to be able to gauge where to cut the foreskin is that they deliberately induce an erection in the baby before they start clamping and cutting. And this isn't something you're likely to see in a medical textbook, but it is a common report among doctors, and you can find photographic evidence of this on the web, not of the actual masturbation, but of the result of the masturbation. You can find an erect child's penis just before the circumcision begins. If you do this Google, that Dr. Carley, I think you have the exact text of the Google.
Yes, neonatal doctor DR mama video. Neonatal DR mama video. Yes.
So the video itself does not include the erection or the masturbation, but there's a photograph there of the penis in a fully erect state just before the cutting begins.
Yes, and I never saw this when I was doing circumcisions as a first-year resident. But you see, I already had a reputation of having a conscience when I started my surgery residency. There were different things that had happened where I had stood up for the patient. And so what I suspect is that when I was in the room, they probably didn't do some things that they might have otherwise done because I would have been horrified. Yes.
You're a woman. You're a woman, and this is probably something that doctors are fairly guarded about when they're in the company of women, especially women that they might, you know, entertain in a sexual fantasy nature. You know, they don't want to freak women out about what really goes on.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, it's just. Extremely disturbing, and I think it's very important for people to question everything that's done to children. As a matter of fact, if I knew then what I knew now, I would have had my child at home. That's what people should be doing, in my opinion, is having home births. As a matter of fact, there's an amazing doctor on Janelle's trailer, Michael Odent, and he talks about how he actually goes into the homes of women having home births with a doula, which I assume is the same thing as a midwife, just so that it can become legal. And he's willing to do that, so what a wonderful man to do that, because that's how sick it is. Here in North Carolina, where I live, midwives can go to jail if they do a home birth. And, you know, the whole point of having a midwife, I mean, it's so insane. Why would you want to have a midwife in a hospital, because they're still going to do all the same crap to the baby as they do in the hospital. Does the baby know the difference if it's a midwife wearing the mask and the blue, scrub gear, whatever, or if it's a medical doctor? I don't think the baby knows. All the baby knows is what's done to the baby. So this is one of the many things they've done to try to force people into the hospital. Are you there, Janelle?
I am.
Okay, please chime in.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, and I appreciate your appreciation and your support of my film and the work that I'm doing. I'm not sure where to jump in. There's been a lot said.
Well, first of all, let me just say, tell people that the link to Janelle's blog has been posted on the site, so I strongly suggest you go there and watch the trailer. First, if you could just tell people a little bit about your documentary, The Other Side of the Glass, and as I mentioned, you had told me that your goal is to get it out by Father's Day. This is a one-person operation. She's, you know, having to do this with her own funds, so she is looking for help to do this. But if you could tell the listeners, first of all, what kind of response have you gotten from fathers? I know some of them because you haven't posted on that blog, but apparently fathers are really appreciating this information.
I'm finding that everyone is appreciating this information, even midwives and doulas were saying, oh, yeah, the father. I mean, our whole cultural perspective of birth is that it's the woman and it's the doctor. And it's the doctor doing it to the woman. So midwives and doulas have been fighting for the rights of women to give birth with their own choices and in their own homes, you know, without drugs, naturally, with an empowered birth. And so they're so involved in that a lot of times people, our culture even forgets that it's the baby's birth.
Yeah.
You know, my birth was my birth. Your birth was your birth, whoever you are. Your experience of being gestated and leaving the mother's womb and coming into this world is your experience, and it's imprinted in your early brain that is sensory and emotional and nonverbal. And it's the foundation. It defines us. It defines our perspective of the world, our perspective of our parents. When we experience coming into this world with issues of control and violence and our rights being taken away and being harmed, having our cord blood taken, being separated from our mother. I mean, separation of the mother-baby is the absolute worst thing that we are doing on this planet, and it's the most simple thing that we could do to create a totally different humanity. So,
yes, as a matter of fact, let me just mention one of the most powerful things I saw in the trailer on your blog was this one mother talking about how she didn't want to have the baby's cord, you know, cut right after birth, which is one of the many insane things they do. Obviously, the best thing to do is to wait till the placenta's delivered, to wait till all that blood has been pulsed into the baby, and then cut the cord. There's no big rush to do it. Why these monsters do it, I never got an explanation for that in medical school. But this one mother who knew better than the doctor, and she's screaming no as they're telling the father to cut the cord, and they basically, you know, totally ignore her and do what they're going to do anyways. And one of the fathers, I don't know if it was the same father, you know, he was trying to do everything he could to get the baby back to the mother. The baby needs its mother. And the answer of these monster, you know, nurses, oh, we have to do our evaluation. You know, they have their APGAR score. They have to, you know, tally. Who gives a crap? I mean, the most important thing the baby needs after the baby is born is the mother.
Right.
Go ahead.
And in our culture, all of these things are now considered normal. Everything that you were talking about with the normative abuse, what Rich was talking about, and you were talking about related to circumcision, also applies to everything that happens in the birth experience. The cord was clamped after men took over birth, when medicine took over birth, when ether was the norm in the 30s and 40s, and babies were getting a full dose of ether, and the mothers were knocked out during the twilight sleep. So the mothers knocked out, the baby's flaccid and struggling, so they immediately clamped the cord to stop the drugs to continue to go into the cord, but also to take the baby away and resuscitate them. And repeatedly through history and everything in medicine, when you begin to educate yourself, you see all these rituals in the hospital that have nothing to do with their own science and with logic. You know, separating the mother and baby, no other mammal on the planet separates the mother and the baby. In fact, baby animals can only tolerate, well, they can't tolerate any separation. And humans can't tolerate separation from the mother either. But it's being done over and over and over, and that shows you how resilient we are. But that experience is actually creating our survival techniques in our brain. It's subconscious, nonverbal, sensory, emotional. We don't even know that we're doing these survival things throughout our life because it was done to us in those moments. So we're the only mammal that does this. The cord is a whole issue. The placenta is a whole other issue that I have been exploring for a long time, and that will be a lot in the film. I'm going to say that the film is in four parts, and it's over 4 hours long. It started out to be a short little film about the experience of the baby comparing home birth and hospital birth. And the baby that you were talking about, Dr. Carley, is my grandson, who was going to be born in the hospital, vaginal birth after a cesarean in Arizona, because it's illegal to do what they call a VBAC, a vaginal birth after a cesarean, in the home. So we were prepared, and I thought it was going to be, I was going to be able to show this birth that would show that you can be kind and you can be respectful and women can be empowered. You can have your, quote, home birth in the hospital. And what we got was the total opposite, which you described. But I'm looking at, well, I'm several thoughts going on right now. I want to go back to the film part that I'm releasing is part one, which is about probably will be 35 minutes. And that is for midwives and doulas to show. I get requests all the time for this from midwives and doulas and childbirth educators want to show the trailer to fathers in their classes or hand them out. So this will be an expanded version of the trailer that is for midwives, doulas, childbirth educators to use, and it's also for women and men to use to go to their doctor and go, here's the research. This is what we want. And so this piece will be in case, because doctors don't have time. Men, have not. They're so indoctrinated and into believing that they don't have a role and they just go along, and they're sort of being forced right now to catch up education-wise. So this might be the only thing that he watches. He may not want to watch the whole 4 hours, but hopefully he will after he sees the first piece. So that's what's coming out. And then in another part called We Can Be Much Kinder is when I look at all of these things, the mother-baby attachment and the cord clamping. And I believe that sometime soon, it won't be soon enough for me, but I would love in the next few years if our cultures, our society, our world began to look at the function of the placenta. The placenta has been the baby's organ, first of all, and it's connected to the mother, but it has grown this baby. This is the other in the womb. This is the baby's
lifeline.
The baby's source, the baby's God, outside of the mother. The mother, we have the mother and the father in the womb, the mother's body, and then spirit, which is through the breast. And so how we treat this placenta, I believe, has extreme ramifications for our presence on the planet and our presence in relationship to God the Father and the Mother Earth. And if I were doing it today, I have four children and they were all hospital births, and they were all, everything that I know now was harmful and violating. But if I were having a baby now, I would have a lotus birth, which is where you leave the placenta attached until it falls off naturally. And when I retook some classes a few years ago, I retook anatomy and some other classes. The teacher kept saying, structure and function, structure and function. If you don't remember anything else, remember every structure has a function. And I was already in this birth work, so I was like, yeah, the placenta has a function. And this placenta has just accomplished this amazing feat. And so when the baby's outside the womb, that placenta still has a function. Just because of the schedule and the time frames of the modern medical birth, saying that it needs to be cut, it's so wrong. It's just so wrong. And even the research now shows that they're really wrong, but you cannot get these people. They're so fear-based. Even where I live right now in the United States, in a fairly well-known college town, which is, there's a national college here, the nurses will tell people, if we don't cut the cord, the baby might die. Nurses are actually saying things like that to educated people, or they're doing like what you described in my film, when I was in the room, and my son-in-law was in the room, and my daughter's crying no. And they count on families being in this heightened emotional state because your baby's coming forth. You're not meant to be on guard and protecting. We're supposed to be protected. The medical profession, these educated, certified, licensed people who are in charge of our bodies and making life and death decisions about us, they're the ones who need to protect us. They're the ones who need to make sure that the science is adhered to. They're the ones who need to keep the baby and the mother. We know, we've known for 60 years, 50 years, Harlow and Prescott and all kinds of people, Winnicott, have been talking about mother-baby attachment as the core for creating a human being who is secure and safe on the planet. And because we have a culture, we have a world now because of the spreading around the world of people who do not feel safe on the planet from the moment they get here. And that is the root of war. So my film starts out talking about the consciousness when we come in and the whole gestation and the father's in the birth, and then I end with talking about war and how we can create human beings who are wanted and loved and safe and secure, and then they have the breast. They've been able to crawl to the breast after birth and attach like every other mammal on the planet. And when you do that, you have secure attachment.
Okay.
That's what we need to make a peaceful planet.
Okay, I have to make some comments here. I'm jumping out of my chair. First of all, their intention is not to make normal, healthy individuals. These same monsters, psychopaths, are the ones who are labeling mothers in the UK that have said their children are vaccine damaged with Munchausen syndrome and then taking their children away from them. And there's nothing worse you can do to a child than separate it from its mother. At birth, it's for a certain period of time, whatever. What these monsters are doing is forever, okay? So that is not their intention. These psychopaths are trying to create total chaos. It goes into the whole New World Order thing, and that's a topic for another show. But another thing I want to mention is, when did birth become a pathological problem to begin with? I had the honor of assisting two of my dogs who gave birth to their litters of puppies, and I didn't have to do a darn thing. I was just there watching to make sure everything was okay. And they instinctively knew what to do. And just like you said, one of the very first things the puppy does, as soon as the mom dog licks off the puppy, and actually that helps to stimulate the puppy and get him moving, he crawls up to the breast to start drinking. And of course, this is what's supposed to happen, and that's why the hospitals have made this into, you know, a disease state, basically. You're pregnant, okay, come in here. And yes, it was even worse back in the day that you were talking about. As a matter of fact, I'm 57 years old. I'm sure that my mother got ether when I was born. And the way I know that is because to this day I have a huge scar on my forehead. And when I asked my mother what that scar was from, she said, oh, they had to put forceps on your head and pull you out. So I'm sure the reason they had to do that is because my mother was in a coma, because I'm sure they gave her ether. One of the other things I wanted to mention, of course, is you're talking about treating the placenta as a sacred object. What are they doing with placentas? Well, they're selling them to cosmetic companies. What are they doing with foreskins? They're selling them to pharmaceutical companies as well to make fake skin to use on burn victims, etc. And the placenta
is being, they're harvesting stem cells and researching with those, and they're creating medical solutions for different kinds of illnesses like Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, if a human being gets its cord blood, it gets its stem cells, and then it takes like 3 to 4 days for the milk to come in. Well, mm-hmm. It also takes that amount of time for the placenta to fall off. And my theory is, and I think that we're going to find out as time goes on, and they're going to see the benefit of the placenta being attached, just like they now, every day, some new amazing thing comes out about breast milk and the stem cells and how breast milk can heal cancer, even pancreatic cancer, when adults drink it. We're gonna find out that there was something going on in this period because the breasts take over from the placenta in continuing to nourish and grow the baby for at least 9 months in arms, 9 to 12 months in arms, baby in arms, having breast milk anytime it wants, he or she wants or needs nourishment or nurturing or hydration. That baby is supposed to be in the mother's arms, and there's this transition period out of breastfeeding. The breastfeeding is being shown to be needed for 2 to 5 years afterwards. But there's this back to this moment from the moment of birth, having this cord clamped immediately, and I mean immediately, to when the breast milk comes in. That baby is so vulnerable, and that's when they're putting all those injections in there and doing some major damage to every human being on the planet. And I think the fact that we are surviving just shows how resilient we are. But do we really want to live like this?
Resilient but traumatized. But wait a minute. You just said the placenta should stay in place for 3 to 4 days. Is that what you said, 3 to 4 days?
Well, the cord should stay intact after the placenta has been released. I think it's a very, very, very minimum. If the placenta is going to be cut, and Dr. Sarah Buckley in Australia has said that 99% of babies do not need to have their cord clamped. There's really no medical reason to clamp the cord, even cesarean-born babies, even premature babies, especially premature babies and cesarean-born babies need their cord blood.
Yeah.
But, you know, I forgot the question.
Okay. Well, I totally agree with you. Yeah, wrap the placenta up in a little blanket, too. Put it next to the baby.
What I was saying is the very minimum is the placenta needs to be released from the mother's body, and this is the mother, this is the body that grew this baby for 9+ months in the womb, and every fiber of her wants that baby to live. And even if consciously the woman didn't want to have a child, that placenta is the baby, and that placenta wants this baby to live. This placenta has grown and informed and taken care of this baby. So in 2 minutes outside the womb, what's the panic about? That placenta is working. And when maybe placenta, I think that the mother's body knows when her baby is ready to be okay on its own systems-wise. The baby's still not ready to be on its own. The baby's very dependent on the mother for everything. But there's a point where the mother's body knows, okay, this baby is stabilized. And that's when her body releases the placenta, because this placenta knows, okay, but that doesn't mean you separate the baby from the placenta. So, yeah, you keep that placenta in a bag with the baby, and they do this in communities in Australia that do this, and my understanding is those are very profound human beings. But there's research, not in the U.S., I think it was in Europe somewhere years ago, where the baby it was in one room and the placenta was in another room, and what they were doing to the baby, or what they were doing to the placenta, the baby would react to it.
Right.
And when you consider how they're treated like biohazards, and they're incinerated or put through all these processes, like there's some part of us that's still connected to this placenta when it's going through all these things. And then conversely, when they leave the placenta intact, the cord intact with the placenta intact, and the baby is nursing, days later, the placenta will still pulse. So this cutting, you know, waiting till it stops pulsing is just BS. That's just medical stuff. Until it stops pulsing, there's several things, you know, that mothers will say, and then the medical profession just interprets that the way they want to. And the medical profession has recently done some research where they have divided babies into three groups. One, some babies got the immediate cord clamping, some babies got 1 minute cord clamping, and three, and some babies got the 3 minute cord clamping. And guess what? The babies that had the 3 minute cord clamping had all kinds of improved markers of well-being and health. And so now they call delayed cord clamping 3 minutes. So if you go into the hospital and say, I want delayed cord clamping, they have in their mind 3 minutes, which is what happened in the film, in the video. That doctor at 3 minutes, I've looked at it on the video, at 3 minutes, cord pulsing this rich blood. She says it's done because she was cutting. Sometimes that's out of fear because they've been indoctrinated to believe that it's dangerous for the cord to stay intact.
But okay.
I want to make a really important point before you do.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't want this one to get lost. This is the kind of research that's being done on humans all the time. These babies that got the immediate cord clamping in this study and the 1 minute cord clamping and the 3 minute cord clamping were not informed. They were not consenting beings. This was done to them. What do you do in medical research and they do this with epidural research too. They put babies into different groups and give them different dosages. We are not guinea pigs, Dr. Carley.
Oh, yes,
This has to stop.
Yeah, well, that's one of my goals, like I said, to cause the death of medicine. But a couple of things I have to comment on. First of all, you're believing that the doctors are just indoctrinated and that's what they do. Do you not realize? Of course they know. These placentas are going to be sold. And if they're loaded with stem cells, those stem cells can be extracted. Those can be sold. Then the placentas can be sold to pharmaceutical companies. And in regards to your comments about the stem cells being used for diseases like Parkinson's, these are all vaccine-induced diseases to begin with. So,
right.
Yes, in fact, they're causing the disease, and this is all about Big Pharma. This is all about Big Pharma. They're doing everything they can to make the baby from birth vulnerable to disease so that they can then down the line sell them their own stem cells back or whatever the case may
right.
be or drugs. And, of course, the reason they got their diseases is because they were vaccinated from the get-go. But another thing I just wanted to bring up because this is very important, what you're talking about in terms of the parents having a conversation with the obstetrician beforehand. And that brings to mind making a contract with the obstetrician. First of all, I'd like to know, is that something that obstetricians do and then actually follow if the contract is made? Because, of course, the problem that comes in is that when you enter the hospital, and this is why I tell people all the time, you must read those documents, your admission documents. Because basically what it says, they can do anything they want. So unless you scratch that crap out and write, no, they can't do anything they want. I have a contract with the obstetrician as to how this birth will take place, and that contract must be followed. Do you know of any people that have tried to do that?
Well, first of all, let me say that I want to respond to the first thing that you said, and I do believe that doctors and nurses are doing what they think is the right thing on some level. And the proof of that for me, and I was married to a physician who went through an obstetric residency, and I see it all the time, that these medical people, doctors and nurses, will do the same thing for their own family members. That's how indoctrinated they are, that they think it's safe. Even though they're part of this bigger system that you say, that you talked about, which is absolutely true.
Well,
they're so indoctrinated that they do it to their own child.
I have to interrupt you in that. I was one of them. And yes, there's no question that at the lower level, these mind-controlled zombies have been indoctrinated. At the higher level, they know exactly what they're doing. But you also have to realize that they are licensed. The license contains them and forces them to do certain things. So how can they possibly recommend different things for their family members than they would recommend for their patients? And they are willing.
If it was wrong, how could you even do it?
Because they don't have a conscience. I saw it. I lived it. I saw them experimenting on people. I saw all kinds of things. That's why I left medicine in the first place.
Well, I don't think that we're saying I'm not saying something that opposes what you're saying. I'm trying to add to what you're saying to look even further at the mind control that started with them when they were babies coming in and growing up in this society, so that they're people who are very intellectual, they're very success oriented. They weren't very likely, as they were growing up, like the most engaging and conscious people. You're one of the exceptions, and I know a lot of exceptions in my 12 years in this field and in doing the film. But I'm talking about the whole gamut of growing up and being born that way, growing up in this society, becoming a doctor, thinking what you're going to be doing as a doctor and why, and then you get into the system, and it's like, as you know, you go in the door, but there's no door out once you have all those expenses. I mean, I've seen it happen. I lived in a community where there was a medical school, and my previous ex-husband was a professor of anatomy in this medical school. I mean, I watched really caring, decent people come in, and you can't get out. So we're talking about the same thing. But I just wanted to make the point of how insidious it is that when you go in there and you try to tell them that you don't want the cord clamped, and they clamp their own baby's cord because they were so afraid of what it would do.
Okay.
That's right, is a part of it. And I heard a high-risk OB specialist speaking in front of a group that was mostly home birthers brought in there by a doctor trying to bridge the gap. And he was
right.
Talking about sonograms, and he started getting these questions from the audience, and this one woman was really persistent in talking to him about the research, and he finally just threw up his hands and he said, "Look, if I thought this was bad for a child, do you think I would sonogram my own child 17 times?
Yes.
And then this hush just fell over the room, and everybody just knew, oh my God, he's gone. He's a goner.
Right. Because he won't even consider the fact that it may be bad. And in his white coat arrogance, he believes he knows better than anybody else. And this is a very big part of the problem. So I want to get back to the question I asked you. If a parent that has done their homework makes the contract with the doctor and says, look, I don't give a crap if you sonogrammed your child 17 times or if you clamped your cord, blood, you know, whatever. I don't care. I want you to do this because you work for me. And if you don't agree to this, then I will find another obstetrician. Have there been any mothers and fathers that have successfully accomplished that goal?
Well, I'm sure there have been. There are a lot of people working on this. I mean, on my last show with you last year, I talked about how I'm recommending to fathers that they treat their child's birth as one of the most, if not the most, important event that they will ever participate in. And it's more important than car repairs and a job contract. All of these things that we get contracts for in our culture right now.
Yeah.
You know, and the birth is ignored. And my website is actually theothersideoftheglass.com. It's in progress right now, but I am hoping to start an international effort by men to address this, because one man might be able to go, and what you have to do if you want to really be sure is you have to go to the doctor, you have to go to the head of OB, you have to go to the hospital administrators, to the lawyers, to the labor and delivery manager, the nurse, because there are all these parties who come in, and they're all strangers in your life. They're dictating.
Yes.
There is no consistent standard of obstetric care in our country. If you go to one of the three hospitals where I live, and you go through 2 days of a day of labor and 3 to 5 shifts, you will get a different standard of care in every shift, because the nurse gets, it's her territory. If she believes in cord clamping, baby, you're going to get cord clamping. and if she's somebody like one of the nurses in my film, Dr. Angel and Nurse Angel, who did everything she could without, she finally got fired, actually.
Of course.
But she was breaking the rules, letting people do what they needed to do. So if you go into any of these hospitals, you're going to have a totally different standard of care. And I think fathers can start by trying to do this. The problem is it's a war zone. The agenda is to control people, as you and Rich talk about. So when somebody comes in all empowered saying, this is my baby and this is the research and you're not cutting the cord and you're not doing this, then the ante is up and then they bring in the other soldiers. You know, you never know. It could be somebody that says, hey, this is a really good idea. Let's look at this.
No.
But you're
no,
still,
because
you're still,
they're
but
arrogant.
The bottom line, but the bottom line is that what I'm talking about at the end of the film is that a man or a grandma like me or a doula or any partner cannot, a woman cannot go into the hospital and be protected. A man cannot protect his child in the hospital. It's too variable. You might be able to. My son and my daughter-in-law have had two really good hospital births, but they didn't go in fighting for it. They went in with a totally different mindset, and that is one of the things that we need. There's a woman, Stephanie Dawn, in L.A., who has sacred birth counseling, and she's mentoring a lot of women in how to create birth heaven, how to create, and she did this herself. She had a really beautiful hospital birth after a home birth by preparing from a spiritual point of view and healing herself and her experience as a baby, coming into it that way, and not setting up the barriers. But it's all still variable because it is a war zone. And in the film, in the bigger film, not this part coming out, but there, Dr. Gladys McGarry in Arizona is in her 90s, and she was one of the first women doctors to get admitted in the hospital in Phoenix in the 70s. She's just written her second book about called Living Medicine. And she says that the medical establishment is a war machine. And then as I traveled around the country, there were fathers talking about their experience feeling like they were in a war zone and talking about the assembly line and the business. And so, you know, this was one of the surprises of the film. And I've always been a peace activist. And so it really started to come together for me, but it's really amazing how this is a war zone, and we're going into it expecting that we're going to be able to fight for a good birth. It's contradictory. And when you add that with the brain development of the baby, everything that the mother is experiencing is informing the baby about this is the kind of world, and their brain is being wired up. We're fighting for peaceful birth. It's crazy.
Okay, it is crazy. It is crazy. But hospitals have become military outposts, okay? That's reality.
They are.
And, in fact, I totally agree with you, and that's why Rich's work is so important, because I know that the circumcision thing is demasculating them from the get-go. They're supposed to be the protectors, and it's a whole different thing. If Dad goes in and starts talking to these medical devils, MDs, that's what B.J. Palmer, the founder of chiropractic, calls medical doctors. In my book, How Did the Hippocraticals Become the Hypocriticals, I'm going to go into all of that. But basically, that's reality. So, yeah, we're showing babies reality. That's why my message to mothers, if you're going to bring people, new children into this world to be meat for the machine in the first place, you need to have the birth at home. Because once you enter the hospital, as I said, once you sign that admission form, they can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter what agreement you've made with your doctor. And like you said, Janelle, depending on who's on call and what nurse is involved, they're just as arrogant as the TSA scanners. All of these people, they're the control mongers. They're the ones in control. And if anybody should state that they want something that is considered, you know, out of the box, then basically that person has to be put in their place. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to whip you and put you in your place. And that's
pretty much. And then we have a lot of people working in there that are, I call them the angels. They are really trying to provide what mothers and fathers want and need and what babies need. And it's hell for them to have a conscience and to work in this system is really, really hard.
Well, it eventually becomes impossible. As I said, I had one of those angels who helped me. I had to have a cesarean section, allegedly. That's what I was led to believe, because my labor didn't progress. And, of course, now I find out there's homeopathic remedies that I could have taken to make the labor progress. But I had to have a C-section. So I was in the hospital for 6 days, and I had one nurse who was with me whenever she was in the hospital helping me with the breastfeeding thing because she knew how dedicated I was. But everybody else wanted me to feed my baby formula. Oh, he's hungry. We got to give him some formula, blah, blah, blah. Those people will not last. Yeah, but those people will not last, okay, because they will kick them out. They will fire them, as you already said. They will take away their license because that's how licenses are used to control these people. Everything is controlled by Big Pharma.
And so what I'm advocating for in my film in regards to fathers, when they understand that, oh, I can't protect my baby when I go in there. I can't be guaranteed. And it is a war zone. What they can do is men can get together outside of the hospital, not related to their baby being born or not, but being related to every baby in this world needs to have this. They can come together and they can start to address the legislative and policy issues at the hospital. That's how men can take their power back. That's how men can make birth safe for women and babies. And if you look at the pictures of, or you go to a midwifery rally in Missouri, you know, it was as bad as North Carolina for a while, where it was if you were actually a certified professional midwife, it was a felony 7-year prison sentence if you got caught. So
doing a home birth,
But there was a lot going down at the state capitol. But when you go down there, it's all women. Where are the men? The men need to show up, and they need to take this science, and they need to go to their legislators and say, this has to stop. This is not going to happen for anybody's baby.
Right.
And
I totally agree.
That's where the power is. We need to alter the system, and women can't do it. This, you asked a question earlier about when this started. This started way back, 1300s, 1400s, 1500s, when they started calling witches and herbalists and spirituals and psychics witches, and they started burning them, and that was through the Catholic Church. That was in around 1400. There were two monks that created a book called the Something Hammer. They were German. And it was detailed how to interrogate and break women. And that was a result of medicine and the church joining forces. And before that, they'd been arch enemies. They joined forces to go after women and women's bodies and birth. And even the abortion issue today in this country, in the United States, is so not about women's rights. It is a political issue. Midwives have always been the caregivers and the nurturers of women and their health. And they were the doctors and the healers. Women were doctors in their own family. They were the healers. So women always have known how to end a pregnancy that was unwanted. It's always been under the control, I hate to even use the word, but that's where we are right now. It's always been women that were caregivers. So when they went after the midwives, and when they continue to go after the midwives, they're using all these things as political tools. If a woman has a right to an abortion, why doesn't she have a right to choose a home birth?
Well, first of all, so many of these things are involved in economics. I did a show last Saturday.
It's all economics. They can charge.
Okay,
they can charge
let me finish,
for abortions.
let me finish, please. I did a show last week on OrionTalkRadio.com where I was talking about how now they're using aborted fetuses as flavoring in food. Nestle, Kraft, a few others, Pepsi, are using aborted fetuses as flavorings, okay? So just like the placentas and the stem cells from the placentas, it's now a thing to be sold on the market. So, in fact, this is one of the main things that's stimulating all of these different problems. And, yes, it's a very big problem that the men are not standing up. And I want to bring Rich on now. I hope, Rich, that you're still there. In terms of what the circumcisions are doing to demasculate the men, because that's the title of my show, Circumcision-Induced Demasculation. Why aren't the men standing up for their own babies and wives?
Well, this ties in with what I was talking about, the emotional castration aspect. What you're talking about is an emotional lobotomy. You're talking about shutting down and atrophying the neural net, which is associated with compassion and sympathy and the will to defend your own children. And so that's why I'm so it's become increasingly clear to me that circumcision is a form of enslavement, and that, you know, there's a very good reason ancient Egypt used to circumcise their slaves, because they know how that can atomize the family, and the family is inherently subversive to the dominant system. If you want to organize a society around a central authority figure or institution, there is no better way to do that than by atomizing the family. The family is really the last bastion of community in human culture. And
yeah.
if you can destroy the family, as they've been trying to do for so long, there's nothing between the individual and the state at that point. You're naked before the state. And you know, that's the message that they're giving to children, and that's the message that male adults are acting out when they go to war.
As a matter of fact, there's two issues I would like you to address that you talked about on the show that we did before. One of which is something that was shocking to me, but not because nothing can shock me anymore. The fact that the high level religious minions that recommend circumcision do not get circumcised themselves, and also the relationship of circumcision to domestic violence.
Well, of course, when you tie sex to violence and pain, that makes a pretty strong linkage in the psychology of the man. And, you know, the empirical evidence is there. You can find it in the paper. For circumcised men having a tendency to do violence against women.
Right, because there's a misogynist undertone, because in their minds, mommy allowed me to be tortured at birth and have my foreskin cut off, and that's like a cellular memory. So there's like
right.
a hatred for women, even if they don't even realize this on a conscious level.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, circumcised men tend to not want people to touch their penises, very understandably. And you know, it's again, you know, destroy. This is all about destroying the family, and this is really, you know, circumcision is fundamentally, I think, at least as much about misogyny as it is about hatred of male sexuality. There's no better way to disempower a woman, you know, in a family setting, than to pit her husband against her.
Exactly.
Can I be the devil's advocate? Sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Can I be the devil's advocate and ask why is the hatred and the treatment of women even worse in other countries where there might actually be intact men?
Well, that's a very good question. And, of course, the state has lots of ways of indoctrinating men. One of the central ways of getting men to join the army and murder innocents abroad is to tie it in with romantic notions of defending women and gaining access to sex. You know, the in indoctrination of young men into the militarist culture, oftentimes, you know, to a great degree, revolves around, you know, proving yourself to women and making yourself show off your fitness to women so that you can become, you know, it's a sexualized form of marketing militarism to men. But you're
it all involves really devaluing women and devaluing mother-baby. And I think it really all starts with the mother-baby. And I think if you have a mother who the baby comes out and she is the one who picks the baby up, there are no hats, no bulbs, no other hands. She brings the baby up and the babe, what they do naturally, people are astounded when they see what human birth really looks like. And when a woman does that, she stops and she takes this moment where they both integrate the experience, sort of like after an orgasm where people are just like, oh, you know, and then she and the baby both come back together and she touches the baby, smells the baby, licks the baby. A hat on a baby is such a violation, it makes me nuts, because that mother needs to smell that baby, kiss the baby, touch the baby. And then the baby starts in around 20 minutes to 50 minutes to crawl on its own and self-attach to the breast. And those babies don't have, pretty much they don't have nursing issues. So if we have that sort of experience, that woman's not going to choose to cut the cord. She's not. Women are the last to ask about, are we going to cut the cord? Women will not be vulnerable to these systems, and so we have to get birth out of these systems. We have to support midwifery and this physiological model of birth in order to protect babies, and I think that is going to unravel a lot of things, including circumcision. But we know from Prescott that this physiological way of birthing and then the mother carrying the baby and breastfeeding on demand and keeping the baby in her arms for 9 months creates peaceful society.
Okay, I have to comment. Very important. It's always the big picture. Yes, we can do all these things that you're talking about. But if the mothers are going to allow their children to be vaccinated, I implore everybody listening to get the book Vaccination, Social Violence, and Criminality. Because even if the child's not circumcised, even if they're getting breastfed and all these other things, if they're getting vaccinated, their amygdala, their temporal lobes, their limbic system is being damaged, and they can become psychopaths. Okay, that's first of all. Second of all, you bring up a very important point that I have to stress that I had not considered before, but I'm a big picture person, and now I see why they have, you know, basically created a situation in countries where the men are not circumcised. They have to put them in burqas. They have to put the women in burqas. They have to find a way to make the women, you know, the bad guys. As a matter of fact, I had a brief stint as a Catholic. You know, now I'm not a religious person at all, having to realize that the man in the sky created evil. But in the Catholic Church, the reason given for the women to wear the veils and all that other crap is because the women are looked upon as basically temptations for the men. In other words, they're not able to control themselves. So if they see the beauty of a woman, you know, they might actually end up, you know, sinning or whatever the case may be. And now I realize from what you said, Janelle, very important question, that this is another mechanism of control. The men who have their foreskins, who were not violated at birth, they have to find another way to get them to hate women and to disrespect women. Put them in burqas, make them cover themselves and all the rest of this crap in order to make the men not respect them. And it's not a matter of one gender being above the other. In my opinion, you know, the women are the ones that give birth, they're the nurturers, etc. The men are supposed to be the protectors. And if it's indoctrinated into you by any of these means that, you know, the women are the problem, then you're going to be more likely to be willing to go to war. You want to get your Purple Heart, whatever the case may be, serve your corrupt government, you know, whatever. I think that's a very important point that you brought up.
Well, and I would like to add to that, my experiences being married to both my exes were intact. One of my sons is intact. My dad, my grandfather, my brother is intact. And my observation is that these men are actually somewhat aggressive. They're very, it's a lack of good words to talk about it, but in our culture where these men in the United States, where the predominantly men are circumcised, they seem to be like a different kind of aggression where it's this, you know, they're ready to go to war, but they're also very afraid of confronting the status quo. And I have found that circumcised men confront the status quo. And they don't take the usual crap off of, like in the United States where you have to have a permit and there's so many little laws and regulations about everything. You know, my dad was this really big forward thinker, very community oriented, but he didn't take crap off of anybody. And I just find that it's really hard to articulate because I'm just now trying to figure this all out and articulate it. But men here they seem to me like those toys that have springs on them and a suction cup and you stick them down and then eventually they just pop up or the poppy, you know, like the Jack in the Box. Where there's this contained energy that they're always trying to control, and it makes them so willing to go to war, to fight, like to fight about anything.
Okay,
intact men just seem to be more empowered and less controllable.
Wait a minute, I just said. The vaccinations control the part of the brain or can affect the part of the brain that leads to violence and criminal behavior. So it's not just circumcision. It's always the big picture. But you see, the psychopaths in charge, the puppet masters that control the world, they know about all these things. And the way I look at it is they're saying, okay, we have a culture over here that doesn't circumcise. What are we going to do to them to get them to become psychopaths? As a matter of fact, I realized some time ago that the soldiers who have post-traumatic stress disorder are the ones that have a conscience. The psychopaths who love to kill, who go into the military because they want to kill, they're never going to have post-traumatic stress disorder because they love what they're doing. And that's what I see it as. At this point, it's a battle of good versus evil, the psychopaths versus the people that have a conscience. And that's the dark state we find ourselves in, is that these monsters have found different ways of controlling different cultures. But I know circumcision is part of it. There's no question. And that's the whole purpose of your documentary, Janelle, The Other Side of the Glass. I would love to have you do some kind of a sampling of the men who stand on the other side of the glass and do absolutely nothing, watching their children being tortured and abused. How many of them are circumcised? Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah. I was just going to say there's actually a study that was done recently on the correlation between adults' psychopathy, you know, sociopathy, and whether they had a difficult birth followed by rejection, maternal rejection. And, of course, lack of breastfeeding would be perceived by the baby as a form of maternal rejection, and you tie that in with standard obstetrical procedures. And this is really a psychopath factory is what we're talking about.
Yes. They're creating psychopaths intentionally. Because if we have a world of psychopaths where all kinds of crimes are being committed every day, and this gets into the global pedophile thing, and that's another show, and I encourage the listeners to be tuned in on April 1st. I'm going to have as my guest Dave McGowan, who's written the best document I've ever seen about the global pedophiles who are also psychopaths, but all of this ties in together. And that's what people have to wrap their heads around, and this is one of the most difficult things for people of conscience to face. If you have a conscience, You cannot even conceive of the evil that's being done intentionally to destroy our world and create the living hell that we live ourselves in. But what we have to do is face that that's what's being done. And once we face it, then what we have to do, in my opinion, is to expose the psychopaths and everything they're doing. And my profession, the medical mafia, is highly involved in creating all these different problems. And as I said, I know. I don't believe I know. At the top levels, they know exactly what they're doing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when you talk about a society of psychopaths, you're talking really about a slave society, because psychopaths are inherently disempowered. They're unable to function as part of a social structure, and that means they're atomized and powerless. And that is the very definition of totalitarianism.
Right. So they get their power by controlling others, and that's where they, you know, get their rocks off, whatever you want to say.
Right.
I agree, yeah.
They're just reenacting their own lack of power. You know, they're trying to compensate for their own lack of power over their own lives by exerting power over other people's lives.
Exactly. Any comments, Janelle?
Yeah, you mentioned that at the top these people are not circumcised.
I didn't say at the top they're not circumcised. What I remember him saying, and I'll, ask him to correct me if I'm wrong, but what I remember him saying on the last show that we did is that in terms of the Jewish community, the Moels and all these individuals that recommend the bris at 8 days old, you know, for the children to be circumcised while wide awake and then have fellatio performed on them by the Moel. From what I remember, Rich, you said that they are not circumcised in many cases. Am I correct or am I wrong? Are you there, Rich?
Oh, no.
Okay, looks like we lost Rich. Well, that's what I remember
saying. Maybe they'll get him back, but I just want to say that you said that you're a big picture person, and I'm a very big picture person too, and I'm a very micro person. I'm always back and forth. And I just want to say that the piece that I bring in that I think is really critical.
They're trying
to
get it back. Yeah, I'm here. They're trying
to get it back. Oh, okay. I didn't know if I bumped my phone or whatever.
No, go ahead.
I want Rich
to comment first. Did you hear my question, Rich? Was I right about that?
I lost connection. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just back on.
I wanted you to comment on what I remember from our last show is that you had commented that many of these individuals in the Jewish, quote-unquote, faith, who are actually circumcising the children at 8 days of age are not circumcised themselves. Is that correct?
No, I don't know. I've never heard that.
Okay.
Misremembering. That's what I had just asked for that clarification. I just wanted to make sure about that.
I have no doubt that the controllers of the world are intact because
right.
they understand the value of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so we're talking about different days there.
Yeah. I sort of have a list of things that I've been writing down, jotting down as you two were talking. I was wondering if I could just quickly go over some.
Yes.
First of all, the whole issue of the controversy of the timing of the umbilical cord cutting, I think probably arose out of the insistence of medicine to cut the cord before the placenta is delivered. If you cut the cord while the placenta is still on the uterus, then the placenta is being compressed by the uterus, and so the blood is at a different atmospheric pressure, a different pressure than blood that is in the baby. And so if you allow it to come to equilibrium, complete equilibrium, maybe, in some cases, while the placenta is still in the mother, then the baby will get too much blood, and then you have the problem of jaundice, whereas... And that's when the precise timing of the clamping becomes an issue. But if you just allow the placenta to be delivered, so that it's at the same pressure as the baby, then the, you know, there's no better model of a natural birth and when to, you know, how to deal with the placenta than just look at how a dog or a primate, you know, we're primates, we're animals, right? We are not, disembodied spirits, you know, inhabiting some other world. We are physical mammals. We have breasts. We have, you know, nurturing instincts that give rise to strong families and strong individuals. And all you have to do is, you know, you can go on YouTube and look for a monkey giving birth, and just look at that video, and you'll know more about how a normal natural birth should be than they teach, you know, in a typical medical school. Another thing.
Let me comment on that. First of all, this whole jaundice thing—it cracks me up. They're giving babies hepatitis B vaccine at birth. Hepatitis B virus attacks the liver. Any surprise the children are getting jaundice? So isn't it convenient that they're going to use, you know, the fact of the placenta not being delivered fast enough as an excuse for jaundice? How can there be too much blood? The babies need all the blood they can get. And I would purport that the reason that they want the placenta to be delivered as fast as possible is because then the doctor can get back to his golf game.
That, and also, of course, an engorged placenta has more blood to market for the stem cells. But also,
right.
As far as the liver toxicity, the drugs that they feed the mother, that they give the mother during birth, are known to interfere with the metabolism of hemoglobin in the liver of the baby. And so that probably causes jaundice right there.
Yes.
Another thing, the sale of the foreskin creates a financial impetus, motivation for the doctor to not administer pain relief. Even today, you know, most doctors who perform circumcisions in the United States, anyway, still do not give the baby any pain relief. And there is a financial motivation for that, which may or may not be conscious in the doctor, and that is that a foreskin which has been exposed to Novocaine or whatever other local anesthetics might be used is not suitable for marketing to biological research laboratories. And also the deprivation of the breastfeeding is really there's a very close tie in there with the premature umbilical cord clamping. You know, human beings I should say, are anatomically designed in a way that is not well suited to an easy birth. The fact that we walk upright and we have large heads, this necessitates delivering babies at an earlier stage of their development than other mammals deliver babies. And so what that means is that the breastfeeding is even more important to the human baby than it is to other mammals. The breastfeeding is really a continuation of the placental nurturing of the baby.
Could I add that that's why we also need to leave the cord intact, and which is different from, say, cats and other mammals that have multiple babies, is that we are human beings with these thinking cortexes, and we really need to have that cord blood.
It's not just the cord blood. I think you have something there about the emotional impact of severing really what should be the transition from the fetal state into the state of being bonded with the mother. The placenta really is the other. It's something that has to have some kind of emotional impact on the child.
I really think that's what separates us from other mammals.
What separates us from other mammals? To me, the other mammals are more intelligent than humans are, that are allowing all these interventions that are causing problems.
Because people will say, look at the animals, but then when you look at the animals, they fairly quickly will they will chew the cord through, and then they eat the placenta. And I think that what makes humans different from the other mammals is that we have this thinking brain, this intellectual brain, and I think also the placenta that's how they justify cutting the cord sometimes when you say, well, look at the animals. Well, they chew it off right away and they eat it. So we should just cut it off because we're mammals and we don't need it.
They eat it for nourishment because their bodies have been ravaged because they're giving birth to multiple puppies or kittens or monkeys, whatever the case may be. That's why they're eating it. And also, I'm sure, so that, you know, Big Pharma can't confiscate it and use it for whatever their purposes are, although they can't psychologically, obviously, know that. But, you know.
Well, I hope I was able to make my point that to tag on to what Rich was talking about how critical the breastfeeding is and the placental blood, and to add to that this placenta staying intact with the baby until the baby is ready to let go of it, until the body is ready to let go of it. We need to do ceremony around it. We need to honor it. The baby needs to say goodbye to the other. Most of us in our culture, most human beings are struggling to find the other and to find connection. And I just want to say that if we were to give birth the way I described earlier and all of these things are in place, you know, we're going to have a mother who is like a fierce tiger if she needs to be, but this purring mama cat, most of the time, she's not going to let them put erythromycin in ointment in the eye. She's not going to let them do that shot. She's not going to let them take the baby away and weigh it and do all of these things.
Unless she signed the admission forms upon entry into the hospital. In which case she loses all her power, and that's
and
why
because you can't do that kind of birth in the hospital, and that's what my film is about. Is we can do this kind of birth in the hospital.
Because some
women do need to, and we have evolved into a society that thinks that 99% of women need to be in the hospital, and on the pendulum swinging back to that, we need to look at how we're doing it in the hospital. And if we're, you know, medical treatment is a good thing when they need it.
Medical treatment is a good thing? I can't believe you're saying that. Okay.
There are some women and babies who would die if they did not have medical attention.
Okay.
If they did not have a medically trained person.
Those people can get a doctor like Michael Odent that's on your website to participate in the home birth, and if there's a problem, he can intervene, and he can bring him to the hospital. Land of the superbugs, due to all the use of antibiotics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes.
And we have to look at women's choice. There are women who do not want to choose to have a birth at home, and if they choose not to have a birth at home and they choose to go to the hospital, there is no reason why she should have to endure these tortures. It is our responsibility as a culture to get together and to demand that these people that you guys have talked about as sociopaths and all that, and that they are in power and they're doing all these things for monetary reasons and personal vengeance and psychopathic reasons, they need to stop. They need to stop. A woman has a right to choose to go to the hospital and have that protection or whatever, and to be treated with respect and to be treated with the true medical scientific knowledge, and that is you leave the baby alone, you leave the mother alone, you don't do all these drugs, you don't induce, you don't do cesarean for no reason. That should be, there's 5% of the people who need a cesarean. But that doesn't mean that the 95 should be out of the hospital, or it doesn't mean they shouldn't have a choice about being able to go to the hospital. My daughter-in-law has had two good births in the hospital. Stephanie Dawn has had two good births in the hospital, respectful, sacred births. And it comes from within. You have
well,
to
you
have
see,
the
eventually it's going to be a market type thing. Okay, when people actually exert their power of the purse, when they let these monsters know, we are not going to go to your hospital if you're not going to respect our wishes. And that is a very important thing that people can do. Myself, I think that that's the last place you would want to have birth, as I said, land of the superbugs and all these other things. And you
let
me finish. I have had many clients who have actually told the doctors they did not want their children vaccinated with hepatitis B at birth. And when push comes to shove, after I realized that they were vaccine damaged, turns out they were given the hepatitis B, despite the fact that the parents didn't want it, because they signed the admission forms when they entered the hospital, which say the hospital can do any treatment they deem necessary. But, like you said, Janelle, it's very important for them to let these people know. And, you know, I'm all for peaceful resistance. I don't see it working too much at this point. But when you use the power of the purse and say, what's your policy in the hospital on respecting my decisions, whatever I want in terms of my child's birth, let me know now. If you're not going to respect me in regards to cord clamping, breastfeeding, you know, all these different things, let me know now, because if you're not going to respect my decision, I'm going to go elsewhere. This has to be done beforehand. Very important.
That's why there's outlaw midwifery. You know, this is all about giving women options. And right now, most women don't think that they have any options. And they are, especially in places like Australia, they're actively, legally, you know, legislatively removing options from women.
Right. And that's why the people have to realize that their governments are controlled by psychopaths. It's the same thing with Obamacare, okay? It cracks me up, this whole idea that I'm going to be forced to be getting health care insurance. I will never get health care insurance. If I have to pay their tax or their penalty, whatever, I will do so. I will never get a medical doctor involved in my quote-unquote treatment. I will not get mammograms. I will not do any of these things that I know are very bad. So that's what people have to realize is what's actually motivating all of these different things. And I feel very sorry for the people that are on quote-unquote public assistance, because more and more it's happening in Ireland. It's now happening in Australia, in other places as well. To get public assistance, you have to agree to get any services that the powers that be tell you to get. And those services are going to cause damage. And
this is about eugenics. The agenda here is entirely consistent with eugenics. You know, the people who are demographically, you know, at a disadvantage, either, you know, poor or the racial minority, people who tend to wind up in welfare roles are precisely the people who are being systematically undermined by the state. And, you know, if you realize that the eugenicists, the modern-day eugenicists, who are very much in power, are using wealth and income as demographic indicators or proxies for genetic fitness, then you understand what the agenda is here.
Exactly. And we only have 5 minutes left. Rich, you had spoken to me before the show about what Bill Gates is up to. Please mention that.
That's also, you know, entirely consistent with the white man's obligation to help Africa, right? You know, you can see how much the white man has been helping Africa over these past centuries. The Bill Gates Foundation is funding a massive campaign to get men circumcised in Africa, which is bound to increase the rate of HIV infection, because all this pseudo research that they're talking about, that circumcision somehow reduces HIV transmission, it's just the reverse. And what they don't consider is the fact that circumcision increases HIV transmission from male to female by the well-known and established, empirically documented and laboratory, you know, defined phenomenon that increased vaginal abrasion increases the female's receptivity to the HIV virus. In fact, there's also research out there, by the way, that FGM, female genital mutilation in Africa, is associated with reduced HIV receptivity, about the same percent reduction of HIV receptivity to a female, but no one has done any research that I know of that that looks at the effect of FGM on male HIV receptivity.
Well, question any research done by any of these people, okay? Because as I've talked about many times on the show, the only way you can actually do valid scientific research is if you have cloned animals that are eating the same food, drinking the same water, getting the same care from their handlers. Right. Otherwise, it's all a fraud. How can you possibly make any conclusions on a basis of various individuals doing various different things? And as I said, HIV infection, according to Nancy Banks, is a fraud anyway. So all of this is a control mechanism.
Yeah, especially when you consider that the researchers are part of an institution which has a vast institutional, interest in perpetuating the practice that they're trying to, justify. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you can manipulate not just statistics, but actual laboratory or sociological surveys to achieve the desired result. And you really, really, really have to do your homework if you really want to fully understand and be competent to judge medical research.
Exactly. And that's why I always tell people, don't believe anything I say, check it out for yourself. Okay, yeah. We're basically out of time. I want to thank both of you for coming on the show and for your amazing contributions. Go ahead.
I just want to say one thing to men out there who still don't quite get it. What we're talking about birth here and the claiming, the reclamation of birth from the medical system and putting it squarely back in the family, this is a profoundly political issue. This affects every aspect of our social organization. Our inability to organize against the monsters that are running the system is closely tied in with our sense of powerlessness. And that powerlessness is imprinted on us at birth.
Exactly. Yeah, any closing comments, Janelle?
Quickly, I just want to tell you thank you for having me on again and invite people to go to my website, theothersideoftheglass.com. It's in progress, being developed. And also to listen to my show tomorrow afternoon, Thought Crime Radio, Voices for the Human Rights of Babies on KOPN.org at 5 p.m. Central Time, U.S.
Okay, and take a stand, people. Take a stand. We're talking about the future of humanity here now. This is a very important year. The psychopaths are taking off their masks and basically showing us what they're up to. And I don't promote revolution. I'm a nonviolent person. But I know that if we shine a light on these monsters in great enough numbers, they are going to have to run and hide under rocks like cockroaches, or they can get on the space shuttle, go to Mars, and destroy their planet. Whatever. I don't care. But we have to take back what's happening here in this world and create a non-hell, an anti-hell, as I call it. So thank you very much, both of you, for being on the show. And I encourage all of you to, like I said, do your own research and check things out and spread the word to anybody that you know, especially that's going to have a baby. Although I have a problem with that because you're, creating meat for the machine. But if it's already happening, protect your children, because not only are all these other things we've been discussing happening, but with vaccines, they're destroying our very genetic structure. It has to stop. And that's my goal, is to cause the death of medicine. Okay, thank you, both of you, and keep in touch.
Thanks, Dr. Carly.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.